I was reading this the other day, and to me it's a real challenge in Haggai. I know not everybody's reading through Haggai, but one of the things he talks about there is he starts out, he says, thus says the Lord of hosts, this people say, the time has not come for the house of the Lord to be rebuilt. And so they're saying, well, you know, we got a comfortable life. We don't need to work on the house of the Lord. If you remember, they had 15 years had been sitting. And then he said, and then the word of the Lord came to Haggai, it's time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while this house lies desolate. And you can debate it, I will debate it, but my guess is they probably used the boards that were designated for the temple 15 years before and said, why should we waste them? Let's put them in our houses, because they were stopped by a decree. So I think that's where they got their paneled houses, and we so often do the same thing. We use our money to support ourselves and not the Lord's work. And so then the key question is, now therefore, says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. And I think that's a very key phrase in verse 5. And in verse 7, he says it again. Thus says the Lord, consider your ways. And he says, I want you to go up. I want you to start building the tabernacle. He says, stop and think about it. He's described in between of how basically inflation has hit, basically how they would harvest. You know, they got all the effort of planting, and harvest was slim. And I noticed the Lord works slowly a lot of times. He doesn't just fast. If you remember, in Israel, it was a case that they said, you know, if you don't follow the Lord, you don't do what you should do, he says, I'll send drought. You ever think about how droughts come on? Sunny today. It's sunny again this day. And it's sunny this day. And eventually you say, we haven't had any rain. We're heading for a drought. It's very slow. And that's kind of, to me, how the Lord works. Because he goes after him. He says, consider your ways. And so it's kind of the challenge as I go through these today is to consider what the Lord would have you to do in some of these areas. Because this isn't just a trip that I'm showing my vacation pictures at. The idea here is to learn what's going on there and what some of their needs are. So we're going to talk just a little bit about team workers in case you haven't heard it. We have this verse as an organization. We're labors together. We want to think about working together with God, not just, you know, doing our own individual thing, but see what God is doing and jump in on the middle of that. And this is what we say. We like to take teams to help missionaries with their building projects. And we take basically anybody. Sometimes we say the biggest thing is you need a willing heart. Are you willing to go and do what needs to be done? That may mean eating food that is different. That may mean sleeping in places that are inconvenient and so forth. And also, just anybody can go. There's all sorts of people can go. Just a couple quick ones. We had father and daughter. I do recognize some of these pictures, I'm sure, because it was your assembly that went. Father and daughter, take your children with you. I've taken a grandson with me one time. Sometimes people say, well, you know, I have all these kids, and I say, great, when they get about 12 to 14, bring them. And come and show them the work that the Lord's doing in another place. Or just one assembly. That's always a challenge to me that you guys sent all those over there. And then we get this out of that place. There was so many different types of people there. It's not like, you know, some people think, well, I have to be skilled in carpentry. You don't. You can be a lawyer. You can be a librarian. And you can still go. Mostly you need labor. Sometimes we do like some skilled ones. This is a guy, the cabinet maker, and they needed cabinets made for school. My wife went, they needed curtains made, so she was sewing curtains. We were putting in cement. That's what this fellow in the white shirt was doing, electricians. Traveled with Art several times, and he's on the trip to Zambia also. Just sometimes framers, these are metal frames in Chile, and then sometimes you're just putting a roof on. This is not Zambia, this is down in Paraguay we were putting a roof on. And we started from scratch on those. They said, okay, well, we'll go get some trees out of the forest and you can use them for rafters. And we did buy a few boards to go on top, but basically it was just start from what you could cut down. And we end up preaching with them, praying with the local people, eating with the missionaries, just fellowshipping together. That is really quite critical, or with the local believers. Some ask how far we've been. These are some of the places, a lot of them in Mexico and South America. And then we have been in Serbia and also now twice in Africa. And we put up schools. Laura's familiar with this one. Still use it, it's a good picture. And we were in Colombia working on a camp. We were helping to put in the bathrooms and put on roofs, and we were building churches down in Chile, and we help assemblies get built up and strengthened. I still like to pause on this one because it was in Mexico, and it was a month after we helped them get the roof on. They had a conference, and 300 people came in, and they are out of the mountains. They were Aztec Indians. These were not some big city, and they supplied for them. Of course, you learn cultures and how other people operate. So, Africa. The red line is the equator. And we are south of the equator, which puts us over there in July. We're there in their winter time, which is a great time to go because the nights would get down into the 50s, the days would get into the 80s. That was it. Beautiful weather. It was also dry season, so never rained on us, and it was a great time. As far as Zambia itself, it's a little bit weird shape, but we were going where the big red arrow is, which is what we call in northwest Zambia. The name is Chivuma. You'll hear me refer to that. And the upper of the two is Zambezi. No, that's a river. Yeah, it's Zambezi. That is a little town that we landed in when we went there. We went back through there, and down to the lower one is Chitakaloki, which is also another name, hospital. And that's where we left from. When you're traveling on these, of course, not everything is convenient as it is in America. This is unloading onto the tarmac in Addis Ababa. Just a shot in the walking through as we were heading from one gate to the other. This is the restaurant there. It's not quite the McDonald's shape. Everybody's sitting on stools and things like that. So this is landing in Lusaka, which is the capital of Zambia. And here again, you get off the airplane out there on the tarmac. You actually walk to the left of the picture and then down along all those. You can see the terminal in the distance. That's where we went in to get checked in for immigration and other such things. Difficult picture, but I threw it in anyway. When you first get out there, you realize that a lot of people carry things on their heads, particularly the women. And so this lady was carrying some. I just pretty well hid it behind the mirror. But she was selling oranges down the... When you come to a stop sign, they're walking down the rows selling different things. We went to Mission Flying Zambia for, they have a compound, and this is the guest house that we were in. And it's considered a malaria area, although dry season, basically you don't worry about it too much. And so those were where we were, a couple of the guys were sleeping in that room. That was my room, I guess. I can tell by the suitcases. We also met Mark and Joanne Grattan. They had spent 7 years in Houston and felt the Lord taking them over there. He's a mechanic on the airplanes for this organization. And as we're there, you notice the British influence a lot of times around there. British are the ones that have all these nice straight lines in their landscaping. So this is their office. And yeah, their office and they take care of, plus the hangar. The hangar's there with their one of their emblems on it. And then you walk around behind that and you see there's actually three planes. One's hiding behind the others there. So they have three planes that stay there. They fly out of carrying people. We were not taking one of those planes. They'd have another one come in. And of course, we stayed overnight, so we had some time to use because they were flying in from Chitakaloki, and that's about a 3-hour flight, so they weren't going to arrive till about 11 in the morning. But they had a very extensive, what I say it would be tools around the area, lays and all sorts of things. Working on those airplanes, if it is not critical to the airplane, they can, you know, manufacture, do whatever. They also have a lot of other things to take care of landscaping, like lawnmowers and tractors they have to take care of. This is actually a bunch of the parts that are specifically logged in, logged out, explained exactly when they were used and put into an airplane and so forth. It got to be 10 o'clock, so we had tea time. This is British. And so these are some of the people sitting around. I'll skip over a couple of them. The lady over here on the left is was the one I talked to about finances, paying for staying overnight. Beside her is a husband. I think he's the manager of the area. The one in, and mentioned Mark, the one in the green is Joel, and he was out of Pennsylvania. He was replacing a missionary that had come home, and his grandmother had died about the time he was leaving also. Some people ask, did I ever see Dorothy Woodside? Good question. She flew in on the plane that came with us, and she was bringing some baggage with her. There was another lady with her also for some missionaries who wanted to leave. On these flights, it's interesting. We had this airplane would carry 900 pounds. So when we put three grown men in there, we had over 600 pounds on that. So that left us with under three that we had for baggage. So, you know, when I'm flying on Ethiopian Airlines, I could carry three 50-pound bags. And obviously we had to cut everything down to make it fit what we needed. So this is our airplane, ready to take off with, this is Art Burnham, and this is Luke Johnson. And it's very tight, very crowded in there. Us long-legged guys were just crammed right into the seat, and it was a three-hour flight. And you had, you get cramps just having to sit in one place all the time. Quick shot of the countryside as we were leaving Lusaka, and this is landing in Zambezi on the, just a dirt airstrip out there. You turn around the other way, and somewhat we call that a place there for, whoops, I'm sorry to, but there was nobody in the airport. It was just, we were there, and we were getting met with that white truck. So as you land, kids start to gather. Typical, there's something going on, so let's go see what's going on. And just a shot, everybody likes to know, what does it look like out in the countryside? Well, these, a lot of times you see these houses along, basically they're villages. And they're adobe brick with thatched roof, and obviously with a village, a lot of people are related to one another. Typically, a place like this, they don't go too far unless they have to. Shot, long shot from when we're going into Chivuma. There is a town of Chivuma. We're actually at the edge of the town going up to Chivuma Hospital. It is located up there on top of the hill, and the tower is also up there on their facilities. As we come into it, and then you see some of the buildings, how they are made, very well made, constructed. There's been many more missionaries there before that have taken care of and put up many buildings. I think it's been somewhere around 100 years they've been there. And this is one of the houses. I think this is Alice White's house, if I can remember correctly. Just kind of going around the compound. This is their water storage tank. It's pumped up from the river and then supplied to all of the buildings in the area. There's also a city tank. That little red thing in the background is a city tank. Obviously, they like to have the hill, use of the hill to put it down to the town. Shot of the back of the chapel so that you might see what it looks like. And we'll come back and see more of that. Just looking around in the area, though, these are places for families to stay. Perhaps those who are pregnant, they do a lot of pregnancies there. And one of the things, if you know of someone that is thinking about being a midwife, this would be a good place to go to get experience, because they have the government supplies money for births to hospitals, and so all the state hospitals just love to take the money and send all the difficult cases over here. So if you want experience as a midwife, this is the place to go. And they have a couple births a day. And so that means you can get your qualifications very quickly. And of course, other families stay there too while they're waiting and helping out patients and so forth. They also have a nursing school there. And so if you want to become qualified in Zambia, you can go to the school and do that. One of the nurses we worked with, she was a nurse, probably from the United States, and then she went over there and finished off there, so she was qualified for that. So this is actually the front of the hospital, the gate going into the hospital. They have it fenced off just to kind of keep everything out or to keep the patients in and protect them. There's another corner of it. It's also, there's a gate there you go in to get your prescriptions. And this is a shot inside. There's wards down both sides, one across the end. There are about 8 wards divided up different ways. You know, those who have just given birth, those who have TB, those who have men and women and different things. There's also down in the end one they call a VIP. So if somebody important like the president comes by and it needs to be treated, he can have his own special room with a nurse right next door to keep track and look in on him. This is their filing system. As a patient, if you come in and you've been there before, you get this book, and they find it and hand you the book that you had before. Otherwise, you get a new book, and then you carry that as you go. We are used to the computers anymore, and it doesn't work that way there. You take the book, you go over, and I saw him in on the gun. Well, this guy would weigh him and write down their temperature, and then they would go on to wherever else. They have a triage and so forth. That's how it works. And actually, the shelves are reasonably new. I don't know what they did before, but it wasn't probably quite that organized. This is a pharmacy. If you're looking for something to do, you could go there and just open boxes. It didn't take much to do that, but you know, they've got to get them out, they've got to get them organized, and it's amazing that they can find what they're looking for in here. Again, no computers, it's a matter of remembering where it is on the shelf. This is their kitchen, for those who like to be cooks. Kind of sparse, not too much in there. They cook for the patients every day. A lot of the cooking is a particular, it's done in these two barrels. They are heated up, and it's shima is what it is called, and it is they take basically boiling water, but they will put corn meal, powdered corn meal into it, and it solidifies, and then that is the mainstay. And even to the point that they don't feel it, basically they eat once or twice a day. If they haven't had shima in their day, they're just not full. And that's because it just kind of clunks in the bottom of your stomach. So this is actually the people we're working with. Over here on the left is Martha Logan. You may recognize the Logan name. I think, if I'm correct, your grandfather's probably the one that started this hospital. Luke Johnson was out of Wichita, and he is a young man, but he was a wrestler, so he's nice and strong and young, and those are the qualifications we like. Myself, and then Henry Dick, he's the maintenance man there. And then Art Burnham, he's an electrician. He's out of Pennsylvania. And then Tamiko is Japanese. There were two Japanese girls there. The other one was not available for the picture at that time. But basically those four, Martha, Henry, Tamiko, and Ayumi are the four there that are not national people working at the place. We're in very nice houses, I consider them anyway. And this is a shot out the living room window. This is Zambezi River down below us. And we'll come back to that again. So I think this is the first night we were there. Martha wasn't feeling well, and so we but the girls had made the meal for us, came over, and this is kind of where we stayed. Henry stayed in the basement of this particular house. Just to see what we were doing, this is a good shot of the roof. We were going to straighten this roof out so it'd be straight from eave to peak. And this is a shot of the back side of it. We start to tear apart. You discover there are ants that have taken any mud they can find and put it and stuffed it in between the top of the wall and the tin. And that was fine, except they got a little irritated with us working over there and beating on their nests. If they could get on your shoes, they'd crawl up and bite you, if all possibly. You're trying to work and suddenly you start slapping your leg. But anyway, what we were trying to do, and there was a beam down below us there, and I don't know if you can figure out that we were building a little short wall that goes from here up and sitting on top of that beam. And that would straighten it out so that they would run straight from top to bottom. And we were limited every once in a while by the amount of material we had because one of the local guys was cutting what we'll call tubifores. They seemed to vary a little bit in width and length, but width and depth. And we would run out. And so we had torn off half the roof on Friday and gotten started on it until we ran out of that. So on Saturday, we took off. Get a chance to look around the area. So this is the type of road you go off. As soon as you step off of the tarmac, there's one road, goes through town and off to Zambezi, and the rest of them are all sand, and at least in this area. So we went down. Sometimes you may have heard about the airfield down in Chivuma. They used to have one there, but they don't anymore. Two reasons. One is it floods about 6 months out of the year because it's really quite close to the river. And the other is the Zambia government had cracked down because the international people had cracked down on them. And so they wanted to make sure that everything was clear and like taken off. So basically they would like to build another one in a different place. But now we're talking about trying to figure out who would sell them the land and get the chief's approval and deputy chief approval and the landowner's approval. Right now the price is way too high, which is not surprising because they kind of look at it and say, well, I don't know what value an airport would be to us. And so leave the price high. Also, we went down to the river. We weren't very far from that, and there's a nice curve in the river at this point. It gives you a wonderful beach here, nice little squeaky sand that would be very useful for cement making, things like that. And then we stopped by a camp, and we talked about camps, and we're at a camp. This is where they are at. This is a shot again. They're sitting right on the Zambezi River, and they would go down to the river to get water for the camp to be used in the cooking, the washing, or whatever else you needed. But you wanted to go in groups because there are crocodiles down there. And so you have to be very careful. You don't just go down there singly to the place. And so then we get into the dorms. These are the dorms. There's actually 8 dorms. And we can see 4 of them here in a row in another building. There's another 4. And they get about 280 kids in there when they're full. And we look at that and we say 280 kids, 8 rooms. Okay, that's going to be 30 kids in a room. So you stand at the door and you take a picture of the room, and then you move over to the shelf there, back up against that, and take a shot across the room. I'm not sure you could stand 30 people in that room, but we're talking kids, and they don't mind being close together, and they thoroughly enjoy it. There's also no counselors in there. They're over here in a different building, and so they just have a wonderful time there because they get to be away from home, and they also get to hear the gospel. And then this is where the speaker would stay. If you'd like to go and be a speaker, we could do that, get you in there. I don't think they don't have a long season, and it's the locals that have to put it on. One of the things we could do is we really could be a help to them going over and showing and helping them with how to run a camp. Okay, they don't have the experience. In other words, you know, they've thought up some games. What are some more games you can do at camp? How do you organize them? Because they don't have a lot of knowledge in that, they spend a lot of time teaching the kids. This is where they would teach them. I assume they throw benches up on those. And so there's a lot of teaching time. And not against teaching time, I love that. But it's the idea of helping them to make a camp that would do more for them. And teach the kids better.
Will you ask a question?
Oh, yeah.
So were there seats to be put on top there? Yes.
Were
boards across for seats?
That's my guess. Okay, I mean, it was kind of like wandering around. I didn't ask the question. I just kind of assumed that that's what they're going to do with them. This is where they eat. Apparently, they cook it in a different place, and then they sit it out in the middle, and the kids come by and scoop it off into their bowls and sit around the area to eat. We headed back to town, and we saw this is a ramp, and there's no bridges across this river for a long, long ways. And so there's a barge that'll come up here if you want to get something across. It'll go across to the other side, and this is what it would look like. We were out in the river. We'll hit that later, and that's where the ramp would go out on the other side. Then we also went downtown just to kind of see what it was, to get a feel for the shops. And you have to remember, Laura and I are used to this, and maybe some of the other people. I mean, to me, they're all about the same. They're just small shops that sell whatever they can. But for Luke Johnson, this is all brand new. It's the first time he's been out of the United States. And so he's just always asking questions, and I really think we impacted his life. And that's why I encourage people to go on a trip, is to impact a life, to understand how somebody else lives, to understand what they put up with, and to see it and to see how it operates. One of the interesting things about people are different. And what we grow up knowing is just fascinating. This is a restaurant that has a second story. If you and I wanted to go there, you know, we would think nothing of running up the stairs and being there. If you were to do that, you'd probably be alone up there. Because then people from Zambia, you have to remember, they grow up on, you know, one small hut. It's one level. Their buildings have one level. And so they get very, very nervous going up to the second floor. So if you got a restaurant, we won't go there, okay? Another interesting thing that they were telling me, one of the guys was telling me, is the difference that we learn of how we learn or how we do things. If we were to, you know, say, here's point A and point B, and you'd say, draw a straight line, we could go like that. We'd get it. We can make straight lines, okay? They can't. Theirs is going to have a curve in it. It's going to loop. It's going to be something. They just have never learned how to make a straight line. Now, we say, oh, yeah, well, I don't know how to do things. Now, let me try something else. You say, well, let's play a game. I want you to make a circle from this dot to that dot. And they can start and they can kick, and it will be a perfect circle, okay? Americans, you give them two dots, and it will look kind of like a circle, but it'll be an oval because we can't do it. We aren't trained, but they can do it. They can do that. So it's just interesting the things you find out about different societies. Well, as I mentioned, the the water comes from the river. This is where it is pumped from. A little pipe coming off here goes down, ditch, sticks out in the river. It's a submersible pump, but they have to move it all the time because this river goes up and down. Actually, you go back here. This river, when it is in flood stage, is right below this ledge that is there. And they tell me it's somewhere between 7 and 10 meters, 30 feet variation in this thing. And so they're, because you, if the pump quits, you don't want it buried under 10 meters of water with crocodiles, you move it in and out. I wish somebody had come up with a better system. I need a good civil engineer, okay? If you know one, tell me about it. I wasn't there, but I think this is the cage right there out at the end of the thing. And so then you get out your wrenches and you take it apart and you add another length to take it out. The river was going down at this point. And they also, well, the connection shelled out, and so it takes longer to do. We had obviously made a mess out of the chapel building, and nobody else happened to think about that. So Sunday morning, when we all get there, there's mud and dirt and all sorts of things, wood on the floor, sawdust. So everybody starts grabbing a broom, starts quickly heading it for the door. Sunday evenings were spent, the English-speaking ones would get together, and we would sing hymns for probably a half hour, and then we would sit around and listen to some message. from the internet. Ayumi has the opportunity to listen and pick out something that they would like. And this is her birthday. So this is Ayumi. She is the other Japanese girl. So a shot if we had cleaned off the one side of the building as we went into probably Monday. And Luke is down there cleaning off. There's a couple walls down there, and there was a lot of bat goo up there because there's a whole bunch of bats left, and we ripped off the tin. And we weren't prepared for that. See if we can catch one later. And then this is what it looks as we're starting to put the rafters up, sitting in the lawn, running from the peak down to the eave. As I mentioned, there were, you know, guys, it's hard to get guys to work on a roof because they're not used to the second story. The other thing is, they're not too bad as long as they can keep 2 feet and one hand on something. They will actually go up a ladder. But that doesn't make them very useful if you only got one hand to use. But this is Enoch, and he has learned how to scramble around. He was scrambling around quite well on these things, helping us get everything put together. And I should mention these boards are all rosewood, which is, you know, we would think, wow, this is wonderful wood, you know. This would be like a teak wood or something. It's very hard, which the object is, termites won't eat it. And so that's why you use it. But as a result, you also are spending time drilling every nail that you put in. So this is lunch one of the days. And so Enoch is over here on the left that you can tell. Nathan was working with Art. And then the other guy is Sambo. He would also get up on the roof with us. And he was very helpful just handing us tools because it's kind of like we're trying to cling to these things. You didn't have a lot of things to stand on. And so you'd say, okay, now I need a drill. Okay, now I need the hammer and the nail, you know. And he would just, two or three of us working, and he would just constantly passing stuff back and forth. And that kept us from dropping things because we didn't have the belts that we needed with us. And so this is a point where we're getting the roof laid on at the beginning. And again, we ran out of boards. And so we kind of sat and waited for a little while and finally decided, well, it's too late in the day for anybody to get it here now. And so then we finally left. But this is a completed one. After a good long week by Saturday, we had the first half of the building up. So again, it was noon, so we took off. We decided to go up to the Angolan border, and these are the typical termites. It's interesting what the Lord does to help people. This is a termite house. Now, if you pick up a bunch of dirt, you can guess what's in it. You know, it's probably got some dirt, you've got some sand, you may have a few sticks. Okay, well, you can't construct much out of a combination like that. But they need adobe because that's what they make their houses out of. Termites sort through all of that, pick out the clay, and put it in their hills. So what you do is you go over and you break down a hill and you say, okay, let's make our houses out of this because it's already been sorted for us. You don't find termite houses in Iowa because we don't need it. We have forests to build our houses out of. They need it. Although it's not on all of the country. I noticed one time later, you'll see some pictures of us. Driving along, and it's kind of like, wait a minute, there ain't termites around here. No, different type of soil. There isn't any clay out here. So anyway, so this is a big termite house, and so you work at it, you can take a lot of clay out of that. And that's the other interesting thing. When they get rain, they get a lot of rain. And so for their farming, and this is manzanita, or cassava, when you they put these hills, and so that the water can run off and not just rot all the roots. And they do this with corn. Corn is actually one of their mainstays over there. There's kind of the two crops that they use. This is the actual, we're looking into Angola. Angola apparently is a very unsafe place. Nobody goes back and forth. And we talk about borders. They have a border there. They stop people from going from one to the other. Although somehow the people do get through because there's a lot of Angolans go down to the hospital in Chivuma. Well, I think Angola is very dangerous as far as the military uprising type stuff. But I don't know, it's a border in the country.
Amin in the 80s, right? 34 plus years ago, Idi Amin in Angola was.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of civil wars going on and stuff. And apparently it's still, basically you don't go back and forth. You can't get there. There's a fellow I'll introduce later that is trying to get in there by getting some of the chiefs to invite him in by what he wants to do wells and stuff. And that's his method of getting in so he can give the gospel out. So this is just the border house there. And then they asked me to speak one Sunday, so I was able to take a picture from the front of the auditorium. This is the meeting that is there that particular day. And then afterwards, just kind of look around, and it's kind of like, what's that group over there? I mean, just kind of the next little place, roof over their head. And I said, oh, that's the young people out there. So they were having some sort of meeting. I think a lot of them were probably nursing students. But they were young people, and really quite a bunch of them. And about everybody's heard, after stretching, putting on that roof, that first half of the roof, there was a muscle on my hip that I've decided was a muscle, just got stretched too much. And so it was kind of like, well, what am I going to do? I think I laid around one day just under pain, you know. I couldn't really move far enough. And I said, you know, give me something to do. And so he says, well, we have all these wheelchairs that people give us, and we need to check them out. You know, do the brakes work? Do the wheels go round and round? Are the parts missing, you know? And so that was easy. I sat in a wheelchair and I rolled myself back and forth and fixed them. So when we got done, we had about four or five wheelchairs for them to use, more than they had. The other thing is just, this is a warehouse that we're in, but again, notice the boxes sitting there, just sitting there. And I'm reading some of the labels on them, and it's kind of like, okay, that missionary is not here, you know. And so how long have these boxes been sitting there? Again, somebody could just go and empty boxes, you know. I'd like to take somebody along and say, hey, would you go? Just empty boxes for them.
So were those boxes that were shipped to them for individuals that no longer live there?
Right. I mean, I remember the name Mast. I don't know if anybody recognizes the name.
Burt Mast.
Burt Mast. And I don't know. And you know, of all the boxes, I happen to see his name on one, you know. But basically, yeah, they send boxes. Typically, they will come in containers. You have to understand there's no postal system there. So you...
Shipping containers.
No, they come in by truck. They don't come up the river. They come in by truck. They will come into the port. That's coming from China. I think they come in through Mozambique. I've forgotten where it is. They land coming across the other way. And then they start moving them by truck and so forth. Yeah.
So
it takes months. Yeah, and it depends on what you have. You know, there's... I think they get a couple containers from Canada every year. They have their own system there. It's called ACTS, A-C-C-T-S. If you ever want to send something over there, use them. They'll put it in a container and it'll go.
But what do they do with these boxes?
I didn't ask. Probably not. They'll probably, it's a case of what is critical today is not to open the box. You know, it's kind of like, it's on a to-do list. Martha wasn't feeling real good, but she's more on the administrative end, and so you're down to Tamiko, and this is one of these people that she must have one of these high-energy bodies, okay? Because she's on call 24 hours a day for anybody that's giving birth. You know, they don't just organize that 8 to 5. And so, you know, there was some statement like, yeah, well, I was up till 3 o'clock and no use going to bed because I'm going to be up in 3 hours. And so we cook some food for you. You know, just kind of that's what she does. She just go. And that's what they do. Oh, yeah, you mentioned it takes a while for it to get there. So they get medical supplies in a container probably every 6 months. Figure out what you need 6 months ahead and you'll be all right. But it's the same thing. You got to plan ahead. You know, you can get stuff. And since they are in Africa, they do get a lot of things. There's another fellow that does a lot of the ordering, lives in, I think he's in Chittagong, that right now his name has escaped me, but anyway, he does a lot of the ordering because, you know, you need somebody that knows the system and knows how to, and he's got contacts in China to get what they want. In other words, if you want to... he's in Chittagong, which is... Couple hours away, I think it is, something like that. And I got a note from, or I saw a note from the maintenance guy, and he says, "Hey, the container got in from China. They've been waiting on that because there was an election, and they didn't know when it was going to come. And when it comes, then we're expecting shelves that we need, and so it's different. You learn to live with what you have." And go from there. So there's a shot of some of the wheelchairs and also the walkers I was working on. This is technically, there is a bat in this picture. When they opened the second one, it's kind of up here in the middle, I believe is a bat. There's not near as many this time flying around, and they all disappeared. A bunch of birds were catching them too. Kind of weird how a bird could actually catch a bat. Then one of the guys is going out after getting some more wood for us to use, and a tire blew and bent the axle, rolled the trailer. So there's one more project to work on. And I had a tendency, Art and I being old people, would tend to take a nap at noon. Well, I missed all this excitement. These two boys live a couple houses down, and so I think they probably knew he was there, but they found this snake, and so they beat him to death. And they brought him over to us, 6 foot cobra. That's a cobra. Dead cobra. But that's one of the least poisonous ones there. You know, they got black mamas there. Anyway, so here we are getting the rafters pretty well lined up and ready to put on some roofing now. And in between time, I was able to help him finish off getting some of the boards up because I was walking around better. But kind of like, not going up on the roof, we'll stay on the ground. But you know, you can do a lot because we had to cut them for length, had to shape the ends and things like that. So it was a help for them. Brand new sheet metal, yes. Yeah, the other was old, it had holes in it. They would tell me the elders would tend to sit in one corner that they needed to have an umbrella to stay up there in the wet weather. Friday night, Henry has a bunch of the young people come over. We're just playing games around the area, split up and did some things. So this is kind of, yeah, it was new tin we were putting up. And it's long, it's about 22 foot long, roughly. And so, you know, I would help lift it up to the guys on the cab of the Kubota, and then he would push it up to the eave, and then the guys up there grab it and nail it down, put it in place and nail it down. And we knew we were a little bit short of ridge caps, so we went down to a hardware store. This is only one side, but this is what a hardware store looks like inside. And it's kind of like about the last nail going into the roof. So we got it completed. And it still was only Saturday. And so we're doing well because we were going to be there for another 2 or 3 days into the next week. For those that are construction people, this is your scaffolding. These guys were putting up rock between the top of the wall and the new roof because the new roof was higher. And so they were going down, putting those up. Also had some ladies walking by, so I finally snapped a picture of them. Hadn't mentioned much about Art. This is a sterilizer that one day started a fire. Again, there's this thought process. It started a fire, you know, and so the locals have this tendency to say, "Oh, fire, let's get out of the building." If somebody had just walked over and unplugged it, it would have stopped, you know. You have to understand how things work. Well, anyway, obviously it got burned, and so now it's trying to figure out what had to be ordered so that they could repair this thing. These are the guys Art was working with. He was working on lighting, getting the lights to work and then getting the circuits to work inside the chapel. And the one on the right is Nathan. That's the one he spent most of his time with. And I don't remember the other fellow. He was there a couple days helping out also. Nathan had gone to Chikage School, and they had quit. He was in his 11th year. And so then it kind of becomes, well, what's that going to do to your education and how far you can go? And above that, if you've missed a year, and do you retain it all or not type question. Just a shot of some of the things that we're working on. This is a British system, 230 volts. The switches were British. That affects some things. But they did, there's a back room, and they were adding some lights in there. They used the back room more in the hot weather. He also put some up on the outside. So we went over one night to just see how they worked and if they were doing fine, check the inside. Art had worked through all these lights to get them to work and the switches for them. This is a picture for my electrician friends because they had a wire that went to the first pew. There was an electrical outlet there, so to get it there, you just kind of snake it through the cement. And eventually, yeah, they did cover it back up. It's also where that's where they'd hook up the speakers, what it was, the sound system. Finally, we're invited out to an official Zambian meal, and here is a picture of what I was talking about, this shima. You get it as this big ball on your plate, and you're supposed to take your fingers and you kind of work it around, and the locals, as I understand, actually just kind of swallow the stuff. There's no taste to it, just but, you know, we're not quite that way. We dip it in our sauces that are with our meats and stuff to add a little and kind of chew it a little bit, because that's the way we're trained. We're not trained to swallow things. As I said, it's very, very, it just sits in the bottom of the stomach, and it's like other people, they don't feel that they have eaten that day if they haven't had some. So, and then this is after our meeting. This is a meeting of the men. I think they were planning on how to do more outreach, how to work with your young people, just sitting around planning, trying to reach out. In one direction, there's a lot of witchcraft, a lot of darkness. In another way, they've got a Bible study, but they're a very weak group of people. They need a lot of teaching, and they're trying to figure out how to get to some others and get across that river and get to the few villages over there. These are the elders. I was talking with them a little bit, and I asked them to take a picture. And usually, there's only about three at the assembly because one of them's out preaching every Sunday in one of these places. But we had a Sunday afternoon, so we took off again. This is the sandy road, and you likely are to run into it. A herd of cows. There is a boy just behind the tree there. Young boys about 12 to 14 are the ones that are the herdsmen for this. We went out to see a fellow named John Leach, and he had been around. He's a very interesting background. He was South African, and shall we say an evangelist personality. You know, there's this. They like to talk, they like to do things. But eventually he's settled down, he's building a house there. Again, he's right on the river. It's interesting because you take this picture, we were going to go down and get in the boat. But again, the river comes up beyond this picture. He had a wall up here that's off the edge of the picture. He says, yeah, well, it was about a foot below that wall. So it gives you an idea, there was a lot of water runs in this place. So we jump in his boat, and Henry and him are very good friends, so Henry is running it. Just a shot of who was along. We went up, there's an actual falls there at Chivuma, and so this is the Chivuma Falls, just not terribly tall, but enough obviously to create water. This is a shot of the camp from the river, and then we got back Sunday night. There were some others joined us. They had been sick or something the week before. These are just local people, I think. No, I didn't write it down for sure. I think she runs the nursing hospital and he's a teacher or something like that. And we started working on the trailer, getting it framed up. But it was going to be a couple of weeks before you could get them. He was wanting to revise it a little bit, so to get something from Lusaka, from metal, to put on the sides. It's going to take 2 or 3 weeks for it to show up. Yeah, we were welding it back together, yeah. It was a case, it was, there was a few structural things that were not the best, but, you know, rolling it just didn't help it at all. So what he was going to do is he was going to build a frame, a short frame on it to stiffen it, and then actually put the mesh back above that. That way you could... I'm sorry, what was the question? The Sunday night study is in English. The other is in the volley for the most part. And although there was one, the last Sunday we were there, a fellow was preaching, you know, and you're sitting there kind of coasting because, okay, I don't recognize this language. And suddenly it was kind of, wait a minute, that was an English word. That was an English sentence. Oh. And so he had switched, you know, and he was preaching the gospel. And so English is the trade language. It is the official language. And so, therefore, if you're talking in English, everybody above seventh grade is supposed to understand English. And there probably were some other language-speaking people in the audience because they were nurses and stuff. They would come in from other areas. So this is John Leach, and this is his place. He invited us out as men to come and eat some steaks together. But then the next day, he wanted to take us out to show some of the work that he does. He says he's basically he's not a non-medical missionary, okay? He's off by himself doing his own thing. He has his own methods. But we were traveling across this plain, and you know, you're traveling 20 kilometers, you know, 15 miles an hour because it's so rough. You know, you're just bouncing across this thing. As you can tell, it's just kind of two tracks that are a little bit worn in the road is where we're going. And we traveled for, I don't know, an hour and a half doing this, just traveling and to get to where we wanted to go. And he says, and in the rainy season, this place just gets covered. And he says, so they've dug these little ditches. And he says, he has no idea where it comes from, but there are fish there. And so people will come along in these little ditches and they will seine out fish. I mean, we're talking miles to the river. You know, it's kind of like this is, there's not a river around there. They just, fish show up. So they seine them and then they take them home and they dry them out. And, you know, a few months later, then they sell them in the market because people want fish to eat at that point. So that's what they do. The other interesting thing is after you travel all these ways, these ladies, he says, they want to grind their corn. You know, they've grown corn, but now they want to grind the corn. Well, the only grinders in Chivuma. So you walk miles and miles with your grain, probably on your head, sometimes through water to get to the highway to get down to Chivuma to grind it, and then you walk all the way back. And you know, to realize that's what you spend your life doing is trying to feed yourself, basically. So again, just a picture of some huts along the way, and this is why you like young men with you. We decided to cross here in the shallow spot, and there's a log there. So you say, you know, Luke, would you pick up that log and move it out of the way so we can go through it? And this is what John had traveled down, saw a fellow that had cleaned out his place. He says it was unusual, and so he knew he had some initiative. And so he comes in and he says, he asked him to build this building. He's thinking of a clinic that Chivuma could send a nurse or two down there and take the pressure of having these people to go up to Chivuma to do their monthly check-in that pregnant ladies do and so forth. And so he thought of that. This would be their kitchen if you throw some cement in there. But he pays the guy to build this. And so then what you do is you help somebody be better because they don't have resources. They don't have investment. And that is an area we could help people with, I think, is to get somebody that, first off, gets out of the American concepts, but would be willing to say, how can I help you start a business? You know, number one, they don't know how to make a business run. And number two, they don't have the resources to start a business. And so, you know, they need both. And Americans could come along with some advice and really be a help, and maybe some money, some investment money, something that could be turned back. So anyway, so this guy, you know, he's made some money now because he built this for him, so he puts a wooden door in his house. He didn't have a wooden door before this. Near as I could tell, this is his family. A lot of kids, about 10 or 12 kids around there. And this is the path that his wife takes every morning to go down to the river to get water for the family. So then we finally were heading back, trying to get back, and there's a mission, a Catholic mission had built this. We went down the track, but they, I wonder why that's there. Anyway, we went down the track to this bridge that they built across the Zambezi River. It's a walking bridge, obviously, and it's just metal. You want to have no fear of heights, and you want to have no fear of open things underneath you. And he did that because there weren't any towns on that side of the river, and he wanted to at least get access to some towns. Then we stopped by to pick up a, you know, anytime you're going to town and you find out what everybody in the compound needs, they stop by for a box of potato chips, I think it was. And then this is going down the road to Chugaloki, and it must be about 20 miles down there. Well, part way down, we have a flat tire. This is actually the spare. It wasn't pumped up. So that caused us to drive very slowly, put us about an hour late for supper. So we got close to Chitakaloki. Apparently a soccer game had just finished and everybody was walking. You have to remember, everybody walks there. So this is in Chitakaloki, and this is the hospital they're using now. This is the original, and it was is now administrative offices. And then this is the house that we stayed in. So we jump on basically the same airplane. We're in Chitakaloki this time and take off from there. This is their runway, and this is coming into the international airport in Lusaka. So, any questions? You asked them earlier, so go ahead.
When I was in Zaire, their runway had to be cut every many days. I notice here you got any grass on it at all. Is it that dry?
It was that dry, yeah. And that's one thing. They do have to keep it trimmed, yes. But yeah, it's dry enough that I don't know exactly when the dry season starts. We are there in July. They expect it to run till about September, October is when they start getting rain. And obviously dry enough to be. Well, the river level's gone down quite a bit. So they've probably been that way for another couple months.
Do you recognize the type of aircraft? Do you know the manufacturer of the Cessna or the manufacturer?
Didn't really look at it. Let me see. Probably. I was thinking, when we pulled into the airport, there was one there that was an odd brand. The pilot made comment that it came from Minnesota or something like that, whereas most of these come out of Wichita, I think. Yeah.
What's the most popular brand automobile?
Well, first off, you don't see a lot of vehicles. I mean, there were some in Lusaka. They tend to be more of the Chinese, Japanese variety. One that we were in was Isuzu. They were having trouble finding some parts for it. They were trying to change the oil and the filters, and well, this one doesn't fit, and so forth. And I didn't pay a lot of attention to that, but that's what they tend to be. Again, Japanese have this tendency to, I didn't say that right, Chinese are the ones that come in, supply some of these things.
So then when you go to the parts store for this vehicle, they don't have a computer system to load up this exact part you
need? No, it's a matter of what's on the shelf. And we saw that, we stopped there for where we bought the potato chips. Around the corner was the shop that they were hoping to get a filter for this vehicle, and they were closed that day.
Oh.
So. It is not really close.
Oh, you shut down?
No. Oh, yes, for COVID.
Oh, okay.
For basically a year. Yeah.
Pastors,
Yes. That is because they want to be very careful. In other words, everybody in the building had to wear masks. Because if someone were to come there and report them as having a violation of it, they would be closed down. So to remain open as Christians, they were able to meet, they could see each other, they could talk to each other. They were very careful so that they did not upset the government regulations. If they got shut down, there would be no meeting. So it's kind of like, governments have their way to make you do what they want. Well, I don't know. Typically, missionaries do that, or they send them. I mentioned this school, and it's a boarding school. It's clear on the other corner of the country. A lot of them go there. I know people that have gone there. All four of the people at this compound are single. None of them had spouses. So obviously, there were no children to take care of, so there was no homeschooling. All right. Well, I think as far as Haggai, just one more comment on Haggai is, if you get over at the end, he mentions three times to consider your ways. He mentioned that at the beginning, but now he says, now you have started, you're doing things. He says, start now and consider what I will do for you. And again, it was going to be slow, but he says, you're going to put the crops in and they're going to start growing. Count from this day forward and watch what I'm going to do. And I think that's a good challenge for us, is to think about how we can say, okay, I've made a decision. Let me see what the Lord's going to do with it as we go on from here and serve him. So let's have a word of prayer. Father, we do thank you for allowing us time to look through some of these things, to be challenged by these people that are working in another country with a different people, trying to help them to see your hand. Father, we would ask that you might use the work there, the word that goes out, that it might be used to touch lives. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.